JG 1. Number 11A.
259.4, she said. All right, now our question is, what is expressed by mind and its idea? 259, line 4. All right, so man, starting at 1, man is not absorbed in deity and man cannot lose his individuality, for he reflects eternal life. Nor is he an isolated, solitary idea, for he represents infinite mind, the sum of all substance. So I think what you're feeling there is what is expressed by mind and its idea, meaning then that man as idea represents the infinite mind, the sum of all substance. Is that what you like?
The hologram.
Uh-huh, the hologram. Huh? So what is expressed by mind and its idea is that mind and its idea called man, that man is the sum of all substance, huh? Okay. All right, let's see. Let's try page 1094. And there we read, Christian Science reveals incontrovertibly that mind is all in all, and that the only realities are the divine mind and idea. That's the only reality going on, is all his infinite mind in its infinite idea. If God didn't say it, it wasn't said. If God didn't do it, it wasn't done. See, if the only record written about us is the first record of creation, that's the only reality. Everything else is an illusion and it's of no value. So this is what happens to our life experience. If the only realities are the divine mind and its idea, then that Jesus knew that. Jesus beheld in science the perfect idea. And he knew that all that sinning mortal man was of unreality. So of what value was it anyhow? If it's a chaotic universe and all that, it cannot harm, huh? It cannot injure its useful surroundings. So if we go through the crisis period, we know that it's bringing out that the only reality is mind and its idea. And we stick to that. We look neither to the right or to the left. So if on the right is chaos and on the left is chaos, we just turn away from that old paradigm. And what handles the chaotic period, as we learned in the wilderness period of soul, is go forward. Don't look back. That turns one to salt. Don't be a rear view mirror society. If the only reality is the divine mind and its idea, then go into the promised land. Go into the reality. The other doesn't matter. It's not real. If whatever is said, what we say of others or others say of us, any of these businesses, anything that goes on in the office that we don't like, all these things, is it real? If God didn't say it, it wasn't said. That's we take serious what God says about the universe, what God says about the earth, what God says about us. We don't take seriously what others say. So we only take seriously what God says about the business, what God says about the right operation of business. We don't take seriously that the business is threatened and that it can go bankrupt. We take seriously that all is mind and its idea. That business is an idea of mind, an idea of spirit, an idea of soul, an idea of principle, life, truth, and love. We maintain the original idea of that business, and we hold to it as a unique expression of all the qualities of God. And we don't pay attention to what may happen to it or what may not happen to it. Just if we're going through trouble and it looks like it's going to fold, go back to the original concept of what that business is and stick to it. Give the business a practice. That whole business is the ideal idea of God. That whole, it's just a concept anyhow, whether it's a concept, whatever business one is, it's just an idea. And as an idea, it has to reflect all the qualities of mind. It has to reflect a substantial basis as mind. It has to reflect the substance of spirit has to be there. The balance has to be there of soul. The demonstration of being principled has to be in that business. The exalting that business above the mortal concept. That's life. That's the fifth day. The birds flew above all the difficulties, and it kept that business out of difficulties. The ideal form of the business, the plan of the business. I know that in Seattle there's a company there called Microsoft, and the runner of it, Bill Gates. I'm always interested and impressed by when all these lawsuits come against Microsoft. He says, I pay no attention to them. It's one of the largest software companies in the country now, and he says, I have lawsuits piled up all over everywhere. I pay no attention to them. I'm interested in what I'm doing, and what I am doing is bringing out this fantastic software that is going to help run the, all these computers in the world to work for the maximum of good of mankind. I am so interested in what creatively is going on in my desk. Why should I give interest to what is negative on my desk? That'll work out. And with that concept, he's successful. He doesn't make a reality of all the negative. And my goodness, anybody successful is dragged through the mud. And daily in the paper, he's dragged through the mud. Huh? Bill Gates doesn't do this. Bill Gates doesn't do that. Bill Gates should do this. Bill Gates doesn't. Microsoft doesn't. Microsoft's too big. And yet Microsoft goes right on and accomplishes what it has to accomplish. As does Lotus or whatever these others. I mean, all these software companies have their individual place within being. They needn't look at each other. Each one does something nice. Right within Seattle is another company called Aldus that started the desktop publishing. Aldus is just can be as good as Microsoft that brings all its systems of Windows and what all it does. Each one has its unique plan. If it doesn't look over at the other and compete and complain and stays focused on what its individual mission is and is good at what it is, it's successful. So this comes right down to the human situation. Christian Science is practical. So the only realities are the divine mind and its idea. If God didn't say it, it wasn't said about me, my business, or whatever. Stick to it, huh? Anyway, this is practice. This, as Max Kapler will say, this isn't black on white. This is life experience. Well, we know that, and we certainly are doing it and trying. We're trying, aren't we? Yeah.
I wonder if the method isn't given to us, page 463, line 5, scientific obstetrics.
Yes, yes. All is infinite mind and its infinite idea, for God is all in all. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think that's good. Let's go on with point 8, what is expressed by principle and its idea? Any references that you'd like there? Let's try 259.11. 259.11. Mm-hmm. Here we see then, it says, the Christ-like understanding of scientific being and divine healing includes a perfect principle and idea, perfect God and perfect man, as the basis of thought and demonstration. Well, it's just what we're saying. Huh? Reasoning from cause to effect. We begin with mind, which must be understood through its idea. We begin as a basis of our thought and demonstration with perfect God, perfect man, perfect principle, perfect idea. That's the basis of our thought. Oh, gee, that's just what we've been saying. Always reason correctly. The other is incorrect reasoning, reasoning from effect to cause, going out from what looks like a erroneous situation, a negative situation. Anytime we're in a situation we don't like, it's up to us to turn away from it and see it as perfect principle, perfect idea in operation. Perfect God, perfect man. That's our responsibility to respond in the right way. And certainly the Christ then is bringing out that fact, but it's our responsibility to behold it, to accept it, let's say, as the basis of thought and demonstration. Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, let's go on. What is ungodliness in regard to idea?
John, there was another reference on page 258.
On page 258,
yeah.
To principle and idea. Okay, we'll take one more.
You were looking at 259.
All right, 258. Uh-huh. And which line, Chris?
19.
Okay, Chris would like us to look at another reference for principle and idea on line 19. It says, the infinite principle is reflected by the infinite idea and spiritual individuality. That's certainly true, that the infinite principle is reflected by its idea, showing, therefore, that idea is just the reflection of the principle, huh? Okay. All right, now we go on to what is ungodliness in... Let's look on page 595, 25. All right. And she shows on page 520... 595, line 25, ungodliness in the glossary is the opposition to divine principle and its spiritual idea. So anything in our consciousness that would like to oppose taking principle and idea as the basis for our reasoning, for the basis for our consciousness, for the basis from which we go out, would be called ungodly. So we could say that we're ungodly if we don't always take principle and idea as a basis of thought and demonstration. Okay, point 10. What is our attitude toward idea in the healing practice? Well, let's see. I have here page 495, 14. All right, so we come to 495, 14. And page 495, 14 is what I had jotted down. Let's see. Yeah, this it was in relationship is what is our idea, what is our attitude towards idea in healing and practice? Let's see why I jotted that down. When the illusion of sickness or sin tempts you, cling steadfastly to God and its idea. Allow nothing but His likeness to abide in your thought. Let neither fear nor doubt overshadow your clear sense and calm trust that the recognition of life harmonious, as life eternally is, can destroy any painful sense of or belief in that which life is not. Let Christian Science, instead of corporeal sense, support your understanding of being, and this understanding will supplant error with truth. We replace mortality with immortality and silent discord with harmony. So in practice, it's to accept the facts that all is divine mind or God in its idea. And this is to rise in demonstration by doing what? That when sin, disease, and death, and when the illusions of sin, disease, and death tempt you, what are we to do in practice? Cling steadfastly to God and its idea. That's just what we've shown. That's Christian Science practice. To only take as the basis of thought and demonstration and practice, going out from seeing the world as God sees the world. That's practice. That's Christian Science healing and practice. Okay. Point 11. How does idea react on concrete error, like sin, disease, and death?
Well, your same reference at the end. Excuse me.
Okay.
The same reference you gave us
towards
the end.
Uh-huh.
This understanding will supplant error with truth, replace mortality with immortality, and silence discord with
harmony. Good. So Dave said, well then, if we take that basis of when the illusion of sin, sickness, and sin tempts you, cling steadfastly to God and its idea, allowing nothing but His likeness to abide in your thought, then how does that react on concrete error? Dave says, well, that is a Christ at work. It comes to the situation and it supplants error with truth. Good. It's that retranslation, doesn't it? It sends error through a phase transition and supplants it with the truth. It replaces mortality with immortality and silences discord with harmony. Very good. Yes?
The equipotence of God, could that come in there?
The equipotence of God means, as she shows us in the sixth chapter, there that the only realities are spirit and its idea, hence the awful unreality called evil. Yes? Yes, in a way that the equipotence of God means you give it equal value. If you say all is, the only reality is God and its idea, that at the same time means, hence the awful unreality called evil. So yes, it would at the same time declare that evil is an unreality, and that is the equipotence of God. Mm-hmm. Point 12, what does the idea do to the world as a whole?
Page 565, line 13.
Okay. Page 565, line 13. Okay. Page 565.
Okay, thank you.
I have that same reference, Michael. I actually started up at 9.
Okay.
Would that be okay?
Sure.
Led on by the grossest element of mortal mind, Herod decreed the death of every male child in order that the man Jesus, the masculine representative of the spiritual idea, might never hold sway and deprive Herod of his crown. The impersonation of the spiritual idea had a brief history in the earthly life of our master, but of his kingdom there shall be no end. For Christ, God's idea, will eventually rule all nations and peoples imperatively, absolutely, finally, and with divine science. Good. So therefore, God and its idea will eventually rule all nations. Huh, Michael? How? Imperatively, absolutely, and finally, how? With what, Michael? With divine science. So in answer to the question, what does the idea do for the world? Well, it will eventually rule all nations and people, imperatively, absolutely, and finally with divine science. Thank goodness. Isn't that wonderful? And then of course, that's, I think, the pith, the only, we needn't turn, but on 561.13, it just says it will bring harmony to the earth. Okay, the next point, I think what Michael gave us is the pith there. 13, take some references which show that idea is omnipotent both in the realm of truth and in belief.
How about page 88?
Page 88, 18 to 20.
That's what we just got through.
All right.
13 now.
So, we read there. Excite the org. Let's see, our question is, take some references which show that idea is omnipotent both in the realm of truth and in belief. So we read there that excite the organ of veneration or religious faith, and the individual manifests profound adoration.
No? Start at 18.
Pardon?
Start at 18.
18, oh. To love one's neighbor as oneself is a divine idea. But this idea can never be seen, felt, nor understood through the physical senses. So to take some references which show that idea is omnipotent both in the realm of truth and belief, is that where you wanted me to go? So it's omnipotent in the realm of truth, Sue, in so far as To love one's neighbors as oneself is a divine idea. Well, did you feel there that it's omnipotent in the in belief? Because to love one's neighbor as oneself is a divine idea, but this idea can never be seen, felt, nor understood through the physical senses. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe not quite so succinctly, but that's okay. Let's see. Take some references. Let's see. Let's try page 561-20. We read there. Oh, I see. I'm sorry. It's line 26, where it says that the spiritual idea is clad with the radiance of spiritual truth, and matter is put under her feet. In answer to the question how it's omnipotent in both the realm of truth and belief, well, the spiritual idea is clad with the radiance of spiritual truth. It's omnipotent in the realm of truth because it's clad with the full radiance of truth. And in the realm of belief and the concept of matter, if it's clad with the full radiance of truth, then the false concept of matter is put under her feet, huh? Is set down. Yes, did I hear a question there?
To the sequence in the scientific obstetrics.
Yes. Oh, okay. It's scientific obstetrics, 463.
5 to 20.
Okay, let's get that here. Now, what would you like to see how the idea is omnipotent both in the realm of truth and belief? At what point?
The whole effect. We should return to more to thought from its real conceptions in order to bring forth the divine ideas. So there it's handling illusions, material conceptions.
Okay, so we see there, as Gita says, that she feels, I think, what I'm getting is that she feels that whole sense of scientific obstetrics is showing how the idea is omnipotent both in the realm of truth and belief, where it shows that teacher and student should also be familiar with the obstetrics taught in this science. Well, teacher is the divine mind and student is the idea, huh? So if mind is the teacher and idea, man, the student, so the mind which is God is the mind of the student. So she feels, therefore, that we should be familiar with the obstetrics taught by this science. To attend properly the birth of a new child or divine idea, we should so detach mortal thought from its material conception, so the birth will be natural and safe. That the idea is omnipotent in the realm of truth, that insofar as when we attend the birth of the divine idea in us, if we detach ourselves from mortal conceptions and focus on the idea, then the birth is natural and safe from all false beliefs. Huh? It's omnipotent in the realm of truth and in the realm of error. Though gathering new energy, this idea cannot injure its useful surroundings in the travail of spiritual birth. It's certainly in the face of error. It goes forward. A spiritual idea has not a single element of error. And this truth removes properly what is offensive. Certainly it shows there the twofold flow, doesn't it? That a spiritual idea of God is omnipotent in the realm of God because it has not a single element of error and in belief. And this truth removes what is offensive. That's good. That, I think, is the main point. Mm-hmm. Okay, we just have a few moments. We can finish the next point 14. See how the spiritual idea can also take the form of a mental, visible, and corporeal idea. So let's take a look at page 467, line 27. 26, sorry. 467, line 26. Spirit gives the true mental idea. So we see how the spiritual idea can take the form of a mental, visible idea. Well, you say, well, gee, we have been studying that the mental isn't the highest, and yet she shows here that the higher includes the lower, and when the higher includes the lower, it gives the lower a higher form. Meaning that when the spiritual idea itself takes the form of the mental, it becomes a true mental idea. It's like when we talk about concepts, she talks about the perfect concept. That concepts aren't always just of the human mind. A perfect concept she equates with idea.